You're listening to the FQXI podcast. This time to another source of discord, a controversial theory of cosmology, first proposed in the late 1990s by João Magalho of Imperial College London and FQXI member Andreas Albrecht at UC Davis, in which they claimed that many puzzles about the early universe could be solved if only light moved faster than, well, light, soon after the Big Bang.
Faster than the speed of light? Sacrilege!
Well, that's what a lot of physicists thought, but recent attempts to come up with the theory of quantum gravity, string theory, or loop quantum gravity have brought the theory back into the limelight, as reporter Sophie Hebden has uncovered.
Ask any good physics student and you'll be told the same. The speed of light in a vacuum doesn't change. Hundreds of experiments have proved it. Einstein's theory of relativity depends on it. So what's the attraction of theories that allow the speed of light to change? I spoke to cosmologist João Magalhães to find out how a varying speed of light in the early universe could pose a serious alternative to inflation.
I think it's very bad when you have, in science, when you have just one theory, not any kind of competitor to measure it against. The idea came up like in 97 or something. The initial idea was about solving the horizon problem.
One of the biggest problems in Big Bang cosmology is explaining the uniformity of the universe, known as the horizon problem. If you measure the cosmic background radiation 15 billion light-years away in one direction and 15 billion light-years away in the other, they have an incredibly similar temperature. But if you were to run a simple Big Bang story backwards, it would take double this time for these patches of space to meet. In a simple Big Bang scenario, they have never met, and their essentially identical temperature is inexplicable. Inflation theory was proposed by Alan Guth in the 1980s to resolve this problem. He suggested that the universe experienced a brief period of rapid expansion very early on, lasting a fraction of a second, when space itself ballooned out in all directions from a region far smaller than a proton. This means that before the expansion, opposite sides of the cosmic particle horizon were originally close together, and their similar temperatures now is no longer a problem. A varying speed of light can also solve the problem, because if you raise the speed limit for light in the early universe, it opens up the horizons and allows everything to communicate much faster, so they can have the same temperature.
It's very obvious that if you raise the speed limit in the early universe, you open up the horizons in the beginning of the universe, which is, of course, an essential ingredient for being able to explain why the universe is what it is. If you have an horizon structure, you can't really communicate across the universe. Therefore, you can't have any physical process explaining why the universe is the way it is. So inflating the universe is one way to do it, open up the horizons. Raising the speed limit and making everything communicate much faster is a very, very direct way to do it. And in a way, the idea is so simple, I can't believe no one actually proposed it before. In fact, John Moffat had proposed it before.
Allowing the speed of light to change in the early universe also solves the flatness, or homogeneity problem, with Big Bang cosmology. This arises because of how the expansion of the universe is precisely balanced by the gravitational attraction of its matter, which means that the universe sits exactly on the dividing line between eternal expansion or eventual recollapse. This balancing act requires an unacceptably precise critical density within a fraction of a second of the Big Bang, hence the problem. Inflation theory resolves the problem because the act of inflation flattens out the universe and pins down the critical density. This is a bit like what happens as you blow up a balloon. The uninflated balloon has wrinkles and bumpy bits, but as you blow it up, the surface smooths and flattens out. A varying speed of light, or VSL, resolves the problem too, because the early universe is actually pushed back towards the critical density if it veers away from it. This is because if the speed of light can vary, then energy is not conserved, allowing mass to be created or destroyed as necessary to maintain a critical density. This means VSL provides an explanation for where all the matter of the universe has come from. Not only this, but it can also produce the structure of the matter in the universe that we observe.
It was only recently that we found a way that actually, a way of doing it, that actually explains the structure of the universe as well.
Yeah.
And I think, to be fair, until then, VSL wasn't really completely an alternative to inflation. It was really just some idea which had the potential. It was only very recently that we discovered how to do it, and I'm talking about last, maybe, when was it, 2007, 1947 or so, that there were a few papers in which it was actually shown that not only do you open up the horizons and you solve these various problems, the homogeneity, the flatness, blah, 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 of the universe, but you also produce the structures you see. And I think ultimately that's the proof of the pudding in any theory these days of the early universe. You produce the structures you see or don't you? Yeah. And it's until that actually happened with VSL, I don't think it was really a series alternative. I think now it is, actually. And it turned out it was actually the series in which you vary the speed of light with respect to the speed of gravity. So you have two speeds. You have a light cone for light and a light cone for gravity, so to speak. So you have like, basically you're saying the speed of light is higher than the speed of the graviton.
Okay.
So those theories that actually, remarkably, led us to a theory of structure formation.
A graviton is thought to be the force carrier for gravitational force, although its interactions could be too weak to be detected. Other force carriers include gluons and photons. Anyway, back to structure formation. When we look at the universe, we can see that matter clumps into a honeycomb pattern at whatever scale you look. Magloire found that VSL predicts this scale invariance if you use what is called a bimetric approach, a theory of two frames or metrics, one for gravity and one for matter, and where the speed of light is proportional to the density of the universe.
So these theories are called bimetric theories. They have this property that you end up with two different metrics, two different frames for matter and for gravity. And except that they're not, the light cones are not equivalent, so you end up with these different speeds for gravity and for matter. In a way, it's a curious thing about inflation, that if you look at the way the modes leave the horizon, so what happens is that the horizons, instead of increasing, they're shrinking in the early universe. So the horizon starts very big, and as you inflate, you shrink the horizon. And then you have fluctuations inside the horizon, and you look at the way they freeze as they leave the horizon, and you look at the dynamics. And if you look at the dynamics with, you know, the most simple model of inflation, what actually happens is that they are scale invariant. What inflation does is two things. First of all, it looks at microphysical quantum fluctuations, which usually are irrelevant in cosmology because they're too small, and you inflate them into, like, galactic scales.
Yeah.
Huge things. But also it does it in such a way, with such a timing, they leave the horizon with such a timing that actually they end up scale invariant. And then it turns out that's actually what you see in the sky.
Yeah.
Which is great. Now, what varying speed of light does is exactly the same thing, but in this case, the light cones shrink because the speed of light is shrinking. The speed of light is very big, and then it's decreasing, and it shrinks. Now, what is not obvious is that you find this fact that if the speed of light is proportional to the density of the universe, you end up with scale invariance.
Mm-hmm.
And you end up with this law. It's a universal law. The speed of light is proportional to the density of the universe in this bimetric series. So you end up exactly with the same timing as in inflation, as the modes leave the horizon, with this most general minimal theory of bimetric theory. They have this property that as the modes, as these microphysical fluctuations leave the horizon, they actually end up scale invariant.
Allowing the speed of light to vary is also useful to theorists trying to unify gravity with quantum mechanics, because it provides a way to connect these theories with something observable.
We work on it a lot in the context of trying to find theories which encapsulate the idea that space may be quantized, may be quantum, may be granular. So there was a funny connection, very interesting connection, which has been developing throughout the last 10 years between those theories which have a varying speed of light, varying with the frequency, with the color of the light. So the rainbow has different colors, different speeds. It's like, different tracks have different colors, have different speeds. That really seems to have connected with all these ideas of trying to combine quantum mechanics and gravity.
I always thought that if you vary the frequency, you can then say the frequency goes up, then the wavelength changes proportionally and you can keep the speed the same.
Yeah, but in this way, there is also one thing, which is the speed of propagation is a measurable thing, right? So it's not just something that converts wavelength into frequency. Also, it's something which tells you how the energy propagates forward. Uh-huh. And that could actually be frequency dependent as well. And this actually happens in materials, incidentally. If you look at how, this is why you get the rainbow, in fact. It's because actually the speed of the different colors is different through the air or through glass or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, what we say is that the vacuum is a bit like that. The vacuum has this property that is actually, refracts the light. It has this property that actually, splits the light, if you want, because it does have different speeds for different frequencies.
And that's been proven, has it?
No, not at all. galaxy. So yeah, the universe is a speculation, which was interesting because it connected with all these theoretical things which are even more speculative to do with quantum gravity. So there's this huge body of work going down like at least half a century for trying to unify gravity and relativity with quantum mechanics. And the big problem with that is that there is really no connection at all with the experiment. And it turned out that these theories, crazy it might be, they've never been proved, blah, 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 at least they make predictions. They say you should go there, should measure these gamma ray bursts, they should really come at different frequencies at different times, etc., etc. And you can actually make predictions, very accurate predictions of what you should see with respect to the uncertainties of these quantum gravity theories. So in a way, they were interesting because they really acted as a bridge, if you want, between very theoretical things, speculative and theoretical things, and things which are speculative but also testable in principle. And we're talking effectively at, you know, this splitting I'm talking about, this kind of speed dependence for different colors, it's not what you something you're going to see in the rainbow. This was just an image. We're talking about very, very high energies, obviously. So we're talking about something which would require either high-energy cosmic rays or something, you know, gamma ray bursts at really very high energies before you could see something of that sort. So, no, it hasn't been proved at all, but in a way, what the fact you haven't seen this yet actually puts constraints on what you can do in quantum gravity.
These theories provide a radically new way to think about time and space. Saying that the speed of light depends on energy is equivalent to saying that the space-time geometry depends on energy. A space-time geometry constructed by X-rays will be different to that constructed in radio waves. This is a key principle of the theory of relative locality, developed recently by Lee Smolin.
In the same way that relativity changes our concept of time and space, making them more flexible things, observer-dependent things, here it's even worse because they become energy-dependent, or frequency-dependent, or wavelength-dependent. You're basically probing space-time in a way that's different for different energies.
Yeah.
And as you approach this Planck energy, which is the energy at which you basically see the discrete nature of space and time, then, you know, effectively see something completely different. You see this honeycomb, tiny honeycomb of basically potholes in space and discrete beats in time. To be fair, it's not like relativity, but, you know, relativity also took a long time to become something so established in terms of framework. So there's a lot more flexibility in what is possible in varying speed of light, for what happens in space and time. And we're still working it out. And in a way, as I said, this is like a bridge between observations and quantum gravity theories.
That was João Magalho talking to reporter Sophie Hebden.
That's all we have time for today. Thanks again to Peter Byrne, Jerry Goralnik, and Mila Gu.
She's been Zia Morali.
And he's been Brendan Foster.